Welcome to Hogtails, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
I think the very first time I heard an urban legend was back in like grade 6 or grade 7, and we had a camp out, and somebody told the story of the Doberman, the choking Doberman.
I don't know that story.
You don't know this? Okay, so there's a lady on her way home from the store, and she gets home and she finds her Doberman on the floor choking on something. And she works to try to clear the obstruction. She can't get it. So she takes the dog to the vet. Well, the vet says, you know, leave the dog here because there's nothing that you can do, you know, right now. So just go home. So the lady goes home, and as she's walking in through the door, her telephone rings. And it turns out that it's the vet, and the vet is saying, you need to get out of the house right now. You need to leave the house immediately because it's not safe. And we've called the police and you just need to get out. So get out right now. So she hangs up the phone and she's like, yeah, whatever, you know. So she listens because the cops are already pulling up in the yard, you know. She goes out into the front yard and the cops race past her and run into her house. And they pull out this guy who was crouched in a closet with a huge knife and he's missing two fingers. And that's what the Doberman was choking on.
Oh, wow.
And that's something. So that's the good end to the urban legend. The fascinating thing about urban legends is they have a good ending and a bad ending. So that's the good ending. The bad ending is the lady just doesn't listen and the guy that's in the closet kills her.
Oh.
And that's the end of the story. So if you've ever sat, I don't know if you've ever sat around a campfire and heard any sort of urban legends, anything?
Well... sure.
Oh, and by the way, guys, this is Haunt Heads, and I'm Janine.
And I'm Mimi.
Yeah, so we're back again, in case you were curious what this was. Anyway.
Okay, so I went to camp in Oconomowoc. Yeah. And at this camp, they had this big white house, and it was supposedly owned originally by the Carnation family.
The Carnation family?
Yes.
Now, not like the Carnation family that makes... condensed milk.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea if it's really true, but that's what the story we were told. So
well,
apparently,
that's
yeah, they had a child that they kept hidden away on the third floor of this building.
Yep.
And apparently he was very deformed and he was covered with hair. Mm. And
this sounds a little bit like the Limp Mansion. The monkey-faced boy
that
kept in the attic. Well, that was apparently a true story, but...
oh.
Anyway, go ahead.
Wow. So he's kept in the house, and nobody really sees him, and they become recluses, and the house kind of... it doesn't really fall... it falls into disrepair, but it's not, you know, crumbled or anything.
Right.
Apparently, the boy escapes when he's about a teenager. He's covered with hair. He's deformed. They can't find him. Hmm. Then he came back to the house, and he ended up killing his mom and his dad.
Okay.
And so, I don't remember the whole story, but when we were campers and we would sleep there in that building in our sleeping bags, you know, we would talk about that story and they would talk about how supposedly there's creaking and footsteps and things you can hear. And they locked off the third floor so that, you know, the campers wouldn't go up there because things happen up there. And I remember me and a girlfriend just kind of cuddled in our bags and wouldn't sleep. But
right.
Because it was a creepy old house. They didn't do much to repair it. I mean, the paint was peeling and the floors needed doing.
Wow, what were you guys doing sleeping in a creepy
house? We had like little pads, little houses that we slept in for the camp, and then each set would get to spend the night there. And
get to spend the night there. That's nice. That sounds like a delight.
I think it's on Lake LaBelle in Oconomowoc. Beautiful place. Beautiful, beautiful place. And so that was our story, that if we strayed from the park and didn't do what we were supposed to do, that this kid would come after us.
He was going to get you.
Yeah. So. But it was a beautiful place. And the house was stunning. It was one of, like, one of those old southern big mansions, you know?
Yeah, that's super interesting. The, the not only the creation of urban legends, but the evolution of them. I mean, I'm sure that those kids that are staying in that area now are probably hearing the same stories with, well, like, a little twist.
I actually tried looking up my camp and the history and the stories. I got nothing. I maybe I just didn't look in the right places, but yeah, so I'll have to keep looking, because there's got to be something about the camp area.
Well, and I mean, it's the internet. Like, what isn't on the internet?
Right.
I think there's a very short list.
Right.
Okay, so let's see here. Who went first last time?
I think I did.
No, I think... No, I think I did, because I think that you said that you went... Are you cheating?
I might be.
I think you're cheating.
Okay, if you, you go first.
If you want me to go first, I'll go first. It's I don't mind going first. But then next time you have to go first.
You go first.
Okay, but next time you have to go first.
Mine isn't so good, so you go first.
Okay. Let's see. So I'm going to try to set a mood here.
Okay.
It seems like everybody likes it when I set a mood. It's a warm summer night in 1950. Maybe Earth Angel is playing on the radio. Maybe a teenage boy has borrowed his father's Studebaker to impress his girl. Maybe he's brought her to Lover's Lane, a quiet patch of field at the end of a winding gravel drive. It's dark and secluded, but that's what he's looking for. As they settle in for an evening of romance, their musical interlude is interrupted by an urgent news bulletin. A madman has escaped from the local asylum. A criminal deviant bent on murder and mayhem. Police are actively seeking a suspect. He's got a hook for a hand. You see where I'm going with this? The asylum lies just half a mile from their parking spot. The girl grows concerned over sounds emanating from outside the car. It sounds like metal on metal, like something scratching. Obviously, the romantic allure of the backseat and the crooning of the love song have worn off.
Uh-oh.
She's so scared that she demands that they leave immediately. The fine hairs on the back of her neck are at attention, bristled, suddenly very aware of another presence lingering just beyond the car door. She's petrified. Her male companion is less than amused, having had his romantic evening thwarted, but he agrees to take her home. He throws the car into gear, and they speed down the drive. They pull up in front of her house a short time later, and in the interest of chivalry and the hope that he might get another chance later on down the line, he jogs around the car to her door to open it. As he reaches for the handle, he sees it, a bloody metal hook, hanging there, glinting in the moonlight. Now, Mimi, how many times have you heard this story?
I think I've heard this. But I like the way you're telling it.
Well, this is from the perspective of somebody who likes to write creepy stuff. So basically, I just took the original urban legend and tweaked it a little bit so that it would be a little bit more attractive, you know, in the sense of audio.
Right.
But,
Just for the audience out there that's listening, I'm sitting here on the edge of my seat, intently looking at her, waiting.
literally sitting on the edge of her seat. And, I mean, that's the great thing about urban legends. They make you lean in and listen. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time in the way that we interact today, we don't really lean in and listen enough.
It's true.
And I think that urban legends as a whole are helping us because they're drawing us in, you know, and whether it's the story of the Hook Man or whether it's the story of the choking Doberman, it doesn't matter, you know, it just matters that people are listening. So,
right.
And we're so glad you're listening. We're so happy that we're not just sitting here talking to ourselves.
Yes. Please tell your friends.
Yes. Tell your friends. So that's the good ending. As is the case with many an urban legend, there's a good ending and a bad ending. And the bad ending is this. The boyfriend, irritated by his girlfriend's irrational fear, says that he'll take her home after he goes to relieve himself. He leaves the car and disappears into the darkness. After a time, the girlfriend begins to hear scraping sounds on the roof of her car. She eventually gets up enough courage to leave the car and see what the noise might be, and comes face to face with her boyfriend's butchered body. He's hanging upside down from a tree by his feet. His fingers are scraping against the roof of the car.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, like, actually, I said,
that scene was in a movie.
Yes. Yes, it was. And I will get to that.
Oh.
I will totally get to that. In case you guys at home can't tell, I get super excited about urban legends. So, yeah, I'm really excited for this. Especially since now that I know that Mimi is so engaged and sitting on the edge of her seat. Now I'm stoked. All right. So, this legend is an oldie, but it's a goodie, in my opinion. It seems as if the legend was designed to frighten, hoping that fear would fix the problem of the insatiable teenage libido. But you could also read into the story a little bit more. If you channel your inner Freud, you could find all sorts of sexual overtones and imagery. So, for example, the teenage boy wants to get his hooks into the girl, if you think about it that way. The tearing off of the hook could symbolize castration.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The radio broadcast acts as a sort of voice of reason or voice of conscience. So it stops them before they're able to do anything illicit. The Hook Man is a very popular urban legend. I've heard it more than once while settled around a glowing campfire in the woods. And for me, it was a story that was designed to frighten and titillate.
For me, too.
Yeah. A story to make us believe that at any moment, at any given moment, a hook-handed crazy man could burst through the tree line and flay us all. As the popular fantasy slasher film Candyman put so aptly, from our groins to our gullets.
Yep.
Yeah. Is that what you remember? The Candyman?
Actually, no, but I do remember Candyman. But I remember another, it's a more modern movie, and what were the people doing? I think they were going for a road trip. It was like an English movie.
Oh.
And they were going for a road trip somewhere, and they stop, and one by one they get picked off, and one girl is in the car mad at everybody else, and she gets out of the car, looks around, and he is hanging. And
hanging there with his fingers scraping. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Really popular imagery. And there's something about the thought of this metal object used for an obscene purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kind of talk about that a little bit later, too. I kind of really enjoy the way that the documentary Killer Legends actually relays the story of the Hook Man.
Okay.
They talk about a little bit of what I'm going to talk about, too, but they really get into exactly what happened and, you know, is it true, is it not true? And they kind of root around in the myth to try to, you know, ferret out the truth in it. So, Killer Legends, and it's by the same guy that did Cropsey.
Oh, okay.
So, Josh Zeman. Mm-hmm. So, if you liked Cropsey, you'll probably like
it. Okay, sounds good.
Interestingly enough, the first appearance of the Hookman legend, even though this has kind of been surfing around for, you know, since about 1950, was in the Dear Abby column on November 8th of 1960.
Really?
Yes. And so I have the little excerpt from the column.
Oh,
read that I thought I would read to you, because it's kind of like, it relays the urban legend, but kind of more simply. If you're, so it's, okay, so it says, "Dear Abby, if you're interested in teenagers, you will print this story. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it doesn't matter, because it served its purpose for me. A fellow and his date pulled into their favorite lover's lane to listen to the radio and do a little necking. The music was interrupted by an announcer who said there was an escaped convict in the area who had served time for rape and robbery. He was described as having a hook instead of a right hand. The couple become frightened and drive away. When the boy takes his girl home, he goes around to open the car door for her. Then he saw a hook on the door handle. I don't think I will ever park to make out as long as I live. I hope this does the same for other kids." Now, the really interesting thing about this little snippet is the only, like, literally the only really consistent part of the hook urban legend is the fact that he is right-handed and he has a hook for a hand.
Oh.
So the hook is always on the right hand. He's always got this right hand.
How did we know
hand.
That? Did they say that?
It's in every urban legend that I found.
Oh.
He always has a hook for a right hand. Never a left hand. Always a right hand.
Okay.
So, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. You maybe read into that too, but I forget who sings it, but there's a really good alternative song called Red Right Hand. And I think it was actually on the Scream soundtrack. One of the Scream soundtracks. So, according to a lady named Alyssa Michelle Zacher, she's a writer for the Epoch Times, and she penned an article entitled Urban Legends, Modern Morality Tales in 2010. In order for the Hook Man story to be classified as an urban legend, it has to meet the following criteria. So, she's put out these criteria so that...
I didn't know there were criteria.
Apparently there are criteria. I didn't know that either. So that's really interesting. So according to Zacher, the story must contain outrageous content in an everyday setting. So you have the hook man escaping from the insane asylum, but then you stop to think, well, what sort of prison or insane asylum allows a criminal to keep a hook prosthetic?
Right. Right.
What, like... the shittiest one in existence.
Yes.
Of whatever it is. That, I mean, that's where I'd go with it. So number two is, the origin of the story is anonymous. This story has been around for so long, people don't know who told it originally. They don't know where it came from. They just know that it exists. There are multiple incarnations of the story. So like I said, the good ending, the bad ending. The hook man sometimes is hiding in the backseat of the car. In some incarnations, in the case of the bad ending, the boyfriend gets out of the car to urinate, and the girlfriend stays inside the car, and then she hears the scraping. Sometimes the woman is at a gas station. I don't know if you've ever heard this one. You go to the gas station late at night, and you don't check under your car, and all of a sudden your hamstrings have been severed.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy pulls you underneath the car and... does some horrible thing to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, that was going around on Brown Deer Road not just a few years ago.
Yep. Complete, it's farcical. It's not true. As far as I could tell, as far as I could find, it's never happened. It's never happened to anybody. But the thought of, you know, as a woman being alone at night.
Right.
You know, not checking under your car. Well, who really checks under their car? I mean, not really. I mean, you might check around your car.
Right.
I think when you go out for your driver's test, that's one thing that they make you do. They make you walk the car.
Yes.
But honestly, who the fuck does that more than once for their driving test? And that's it. And then they stop.
Right. Well, now, you know, there have been so many cases of people jumping in people's car while they're filling up. I make sure I lock my car all the time.
That's another urban legend.
Really? That's I thought that was true. Legend.
It may have happened. It may not have happened, but that's in here, too.
Well,
yeah.
Do it anyway.
So, in another story, a couple runs out of gas on a deserted highway. The girlfriend stays in the car while her boyfriend goes in search of a fueling station. She falls asleep and is awoken by a state trooper that tells her to get out of the car, but don't look back. whatever you do, don't look back. And of course, she does. And then she sees him mutilated, hanging from a tree. So that's the thing. Number four.
Well, if he was mutilated, why wouldn't she have been?
Oh, well, maybe he didn't know she was in there because she was asleep. Eh. And she was crushed down the seat. I don't know. I don't know. It's an urban legend. Let's see. So number four, no matter who tells the story, it seems like it always begins with, it happened to a friend of mine.
It does.
It never happened to you.
Right.
It's never happened to me, but a friend of mine totally happened to them.
Yeah.
And that's how you get people. That's how you, excuse the pun, that's how you hook them.
Right.
You get them engaged and sitting on the edge of their seat because it may not have happened to me, but it happened to somebody that I know.
Right.
And so there's a sense of reality in it. In that scenario, there is no real credibility. And there's no person to hold accountable for fact in this situation. You know, there's nothing. You can't be like, well, you know, Billy, I don't think that's entirely realistic. Let's call your friend on his cell phone right now.
Yeah.
You know, there's none of that. Number five, there are some aspects of the story that are plausible and have a ring of truth. So, young lovers letting their libidos get the better of them. Letting their guard down. If you let your guard down, well, something bad is going to happen. A couple running out of gas. An escaped mental patient. A deserted location. Car trouble. Murder. You know, they're all realistic. They all could happen. But the Hookman urban legend is the perfect storm mm-hmm. in that it collects them all and puts them in one spot. Number six, the story serves a purpose, either as a cautionary tale or otherwise. So, in this case, it's a cautionary tale about the dangers of premarital sex. It's a warning about spending time in abandoned places. And it's also, you know, there's something about being in an abandoned place and knowing that if anything ever happened, nobody can hear you scream.
Right.
There's nobody there to save you.
Right.
So it's very much rooted in that. The legend of the Hook Man was carefully curated. It must have been carefully curated by, like, parents and caregivers to deter these hormonal teens from their unsavory mm-hmm. connections on Lover's Lane throughout North America. And if you guys are from anywhere other than North America and you have heard the Hook Man legend or you have your own version, because that's entirely possible, please reach out. Please drop us a line. Send us an email. Absolutely do that, because I find that fascinating that, you know, there might be other cultures out there that have something different.
You know what would be interesting to kind of research is in the 1700s or 1800s, what did they tell their kids?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think I've said in a previous episode that my grandmother told me not to go in the woods because there are bad mm-hmm. people in the woods.
Right.
So don't go in the woods. And then the one time I go in the woods, there's scary teenagers in there.
Yeah.
And they yelled at me and they threw things. And then there's bad people in the woods. She was right. You know? So, I mean, it seems like there's always something. And it's like further justification. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm your mother or I'm your father or I'm your caregiver and you're supposed to listen to me because I am the voice of reason and you're a crazy teenager. So you have to listen to me because I know what I'm talking about and you have no idea. So listen to me and don't go in the woods. Don't go down by the pond. Don't go to the mall by yourself. Don't go to the bus stop by yourself. Don't go in that abandoned house. Any number of things, right. You know, and just don't do it because I said so. But on top of that,
right.
Let's also paste this so it sticks in your psyche for the rest of your life and screws you up, potentially. Often it's easier for parents to offer a narrative in place of a logical explanation.
Yep.
As human animals, we have a tendency to offer narrative to both make sense of situations and to relate personal experiences. This is my communication background talking.
And to make them remember it.
And to make them remember it, exactly. I mean, it's almost like, you know, creating some sort of a poem or something to remember,
mm-hmm.
You know, all of the states.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's very similar. So, right. So they offer a narrative in place of logical explanation to get the point across, though many people under the age of 30 might think that the Hookman legend is a story from Hollywood. And movies like I Know What You Did Last Summer,
mm-hmm.
Urban Legend, Candyman,
mm-hmm.
they pluck the Hookman figure straight from Urban Legend. But that doesn't mean that there's nothing to fear. In the 1930s, a man described as wearing shabby clothes and around 40 years of age attacked two couples in secluded locations, similar to the locations that may be used for popular makeout spots, on two separate occasions. In one instance, a man was killed outright and the woman was sexually assaulted. He released the woman close to a bus stop with a letter to be sent to the press. The letter made little sense, but it stated that the man had been killed because he possessed secret government documents.
Oh.
And that the killer was an international secret agent.
Okay.
Yeah. The killer was never caught. 7 years later, there was another double murder, but in this instance, both victims were found with red bullseyes on their foreheads. In 1946, the small town of Texarkana, Texas, was terrorized by a ghoul called the Phantom Killer, or the Texarkana Phantom. Over the course of 3 months, 8 people were murdered. All had parked on lovers' lanes. The Phantom Killer spree began on February 22nd, one day before my birthday.
Oh.
His first victims, Jimmy Hollis, 25, and Mary Jean LeRae, 19. Hollis was ordered out of the car by gunpoint and told to pull down his pants. I'm assuming that he asked him to pull down his pants just so he couldn't run after him. You know, okay. Just so he would be clumsier. I don't know. He was then struck in the head with a heavy object that cracked his skull. The masked man attempted to rob the couple and struck LeRae with the object as well, then telling her to run for her life. LeRae, unable to navigate the undergrowth in her heels, was easy prey, obviously. The killer was able to catch her and assaulted her with the barrel of his gun. And they mention this in the Killer Legends documentary.
Okay.
In that we have this metal object that's being used mm-hmm. In an obscene way.
Right.
And that is supposed to strike fear in the hearts of, you know, young children who are,
right.
you know, or teenagers that are hanging out on lovers' lanes. Both survived the attack and gave a description of the Phantom, stating that he was wearing a white hood with eye and mouth holes cut into it. A month later, Richard Griffin, 29, and Pollyann Moore, 17, were parked in a popular makeout spot. A driver passing by thought that the couple had fallen asleep in their car, but upon approaching, realized that the two had both been shot in the back of the head. Next, Paul Martin, 16, and Betty Jo Booker, 15, were killed in a remote location. A couple in their 30s were also murdered in their home, though some wonder if this murder was committed by a different person, as it didn't really match the MO.
Right.
Now, reigniting the anxieties of Texarkana residents, the town that dreaded sundown was released in 1976,
mm-hmm.
claiming to tell the stories of the murders exactly how they happened. At the end of the film, we see a figure from the ankles down. His feet are clad in combat boots, and he's standing in line at the movie theater. The Phantom Killer was never caught. The Zodiac Killer also enjoyed hunting in secluded locations, like lovers' lanes. The Zodiac murdered his first victims in Benicia, California, in December of 1968. Their names were David Faraday and Betty Lee Jensen. They'd stopped to park at around 10 p.m., and they were discovered less than an hour later, shot to death and lying on the ground by their car. If you would like to watch The Town That Dreaded Sundown,
I've seen it.
It sounds like you've seen it. Mm-hmm. If any of our listeners would like to watch it, it is free on YouTube, so you can stream it to your heart's delight. It's told in faux documentary fashion.
Mm-hmm.
In one instance, one of the female victims is killed by the Phantom Killer tapes a knife, a Bowie knife, to a trombone. And he's stabbing her in the back with the trombone. Do you remember that scene?
I don't remember that at all.
So a lot of the people in Texarkana believe that that was the way the victim died, but she was actually you know, assaulted with the barrel of a gun.
Okay.
As opposed to being stabbed in this very creative way with a trombone involved.
That would kind of suck. That would take a long time.
Right? You're telling me. In July 1969, Darlene Farron and Michael Mago, 22 and 19 respectively, parked at a secluded spot in Blue Rock Springs Park in Vallejo, California. Michael was shot in the head, but he survived his injuries. Darlene was not so lucky. Police originally thought that Darlene's husband was to blame for the murder because Darlene and Michael were engaged in an affair. But he had an airtight alibi. The Zodiac has never been identified, aside from through total speculation. There have been, I don't even know how many books there have been written on the Zodiac killer and who he could be, but nobody knows. And although nobody knows who it is, his motives were made absolutely 100% crystal clear. He just enjoyed killing, and he likened it to tracking and killing wild game in the forest. And we get that information from one of the ciphers that he actually sent to police that was decoded by a school teacher.
Oh, wow.
At his kitchen table. Yep. They published the cipher in the newspaper, and they asked for help in decoding it because they couldn't figure it out. And the school teacher was sitting down, you know, Saturday, Sunday morning, having his coffee at his kitchen table, and saw it and just started picking out commonalities within the cipher, and he cracked it. Wow. So, yeah, pretty interesting. David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, was also keen on finding his victims in flagrante delicto. In July 1976, Berkowitz shot two women who were parked in a parking lot. In total, Berkowitz killed six people and injured seven more. So, I think the moral of the story is, whether based on actual fact or if it's a simple tale of abstinence, the Hook Man is a riveting urban legend. And over time, it's evolved and it's shifted to suit the time in which it's told. And it's put down roots in our collective psyches. I mean, how many of us have heard this story, been frightened by it, and then gone on to relay it to some other unsuspecting individual?
Right.
I know I have.
Many times.
How many of us have gathered with our peers around a blazing campfire, placed a flashlight under our chin, and let fear reign?
Yep.
So that's the Hook Man legend.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, like I said, the tales of urban legends, I mean, there are many. There are many, many, many different urban legends that exist. And not only do they have alternate endings and little tweaks, you know, I mean, the Hook Man legend that I relate to you and the Hook Man legend from the Dear Abby column were two completely different things, you know. The Dear Abby column was meant to raise awareness.
Right.
Whereas mine was meant to elicit fear.
Right.
So, I mean, it completely depends on the person that's relaying the information, but yeah, regardless, fascinating stuff.
Yes, very,
very
good.
Very cool. All right, Mimi, what
All
do you
right,
got?
So I've got a little story from Ripon, Wisconsin.
Okay.
It's, if you listeners don't know, it's a very small, kind of northwestern part of the state. I believe the cookie company is there. Completely positive, yep. But I always made the connection.
Sure.
And a dark, lonely road. All right, I'll do a narrative now.
Well, you always do the narrative. I was taking a page from your book.
So, well, there is a very dark, narrow road in the secluded area of this little town in Ripon, and they call it the Witch Road.
Mm-hmm. I'll do now, it. Dun, dun, dun.
There you go. So the actual name is called Callan Road, but everybody around the area calls it Witch Road. So when people are driving the road at night, it can be very terrifying. On either side of the road are a deep woods with trees, but these trees are kind of bare and kind of like really old and gnarled. And so if you can imagine, you know, instead of being tall arms coming out from the tree, you know, it's wrinkly and narrowed and all different places. It's a very creepy thing, I guess, out there.
Hmm. Road trip.
Yeah. Often at night, in your headlights, you will see monstrous shadows and the twisted trees turn into an image of a bent and gnarled old woman, the witch. That's why they call it Witch Road. Deeper in the woods is a dilapidated home. I don't know why I wrote remaining, but it's a home that's dilapidated, really falling down. Barely anything's left of it, just mostly the foundation. And that's where they believe the witch used to live. Now, I couldn't really find any details on the woman herself and what her life was like. But there was one very small blurb that I found only in one little place about she was married and she had a husband. And it was in the 1800s, late 1800s, and she and her husband did not get along, and he really believed that she was a witch, and I guess he killed her one day. Okay, buried her somewhere out in the woods. Okay. But I haven't found it corroborated anywhere else.
Right.
But, so they believe that this little house is hers, and people who have come onto the property have seen orbs and heard some weird noises. People have also said that there's a spirit of a young girl that kind of jumps from tree to tree, but I couldn't find any information on this young girl, why she's there or whatever. But there were a couple places where it was said that they saw a little girl in and out of the tree. So, I don't know. But one night, there were four teenagers who were exploring the... actually, I should say that the four teenagers who were exploring the witch's yard, they were there when the house was still standing before it had fallen down. So this was years and years ago, like 1950s or something.
Right, right.
So there were four boys, and one guy had a flashlight, and they were walking around in different directions, and all of a sudden one guy's flashlight went off. So one of the other boys came looking for him. Hey, where are you, Fred? You know, where are you? And looks down, and his friend had fallen into a big hole.
Oh.
And so as he looked around, he realized there's four big holes there. Oh. And then he's thinking, and there's four of us.
Oh.
So they were really creeped out, so they ran away and didn't come back.
Like you
would. Yeah. But that is kind of weird. Why would there be four holes with four boys snooping around my yard? You're going down. Then there was another couple who was walking at night. No one else was around. There weren't any cars or anything. It was very dark. And these were two women. And one of the women got hit with a rock on her calf. Oh. And she's looking around, and there's nobody else around, just the two of them. So as they're walking a little further, they come to this gate that leads up to the witch's property. And just for you people out there in podcast land, I do a lot with my hands. Unfortunately, you can't see it, but I really talk with my hands.
There's a lot of gesturing. We both do. We both do. I was over here waving.
I tell my story with my hands. Anyway, so... the one who got hit with the rock said, maybe one of those two guys hit me with the rock. And her friend looks at her and says, what guys? There's nobody there. And she wouldn't look at the gate for a little bit because she was really afraid, the first woman.
Right.
And she says, no, right over there, there's two guys standing like sentries at the front of this gate. And the second woman says, no, there is nobody there. Wow. So she turns, she looks. There's nobody there. So they decide to continue walking a little bit.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden they hear a shrill scream, really high-pitched.
Oh.
And they can't see anybody. And they decide, we better leave. So they run, they get out of there. So they go home. And one of the women was taking a lot of photographs in the dark. And she said to her husband, here's the camera. Why don't you develop the film? And... let's see, you know, what we can see. But she said there probably won't be anything on there. So he looks and he says, who was walking in front of you? And she's like, what do you mean? She goes, you have a picture of somebody who's in front of you. Who is that? I don't recognize who that is. And she says, there was nobody else, just me and this other woman with her. And he's like, no, see? And she was like, freaked out, you know, like, who is that person?
Wow.
And then in another picture, it was really dark. It was towards the woods. And there was, you could make out this really evil looking face. Just the face, no body, just there. And in another picture, there was a bunch of like fog or mist, but it was shadowy because it was really dark, right. But it was like there and there was no fog or mist. And the women also said that it was very strange because on the road, sometimes it would be cold in certain areas and then sometimes not so cold. So there was a temperature change, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, that's all I have so far, but that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Might be worth a road trip just to experience it.
Yeah, absolutely. So were there more instances of people seeing these two guys
around there? Not the guys. There were a lot of people who said that they saw orbs in the trees. The trees looked like there could be a witch or something evil out there. People hearing noises, screams, like. But this was the first actual figure that came up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting, fun story.
Yeah. I think that's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just the foundation, huh?
Yeah, just the foundation.
The gates, nothing else.
Yeah. Well, the picture that they had in one of the articles, the gates don't look like they have bars or anything.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just kind of there. Yeah, and the house was crumpled down.
Oh.
So
are the holes still there?
The holes.
Yeah,
I don't know
holes?
If the holes are still there.
I mean,
what
it's
a good question.
We should go find out. I mean, if they were put there for the purpose of doing something, it makes me wonder if the boys that she was seeing had connection to the four boys that were in the woods. Like, I wonder if those two stories,
you know,
are
I don't
somehow
remember exactly. I think that the one with the women was years later than the boys.
But that's what I mean. Like, you know, is there some sort of like ghostly apparition that's lingering, just repeating itself, and that's why they're seeing?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
Huh. So the Witch Road in Ripon, Wisconsin.
Witch Road.
Hmm.
But I wish they had more about the family who lived here. You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, some history about the family that lived there and, like, you know, some further exploration of what exactly is going on there. Because there's, I mean, you know, it can't just be these random people are walking up here and having these experiences.
Right.
And, you know.
Well, there's another story that I was kind of researching, and I didn't get too far in that. This guy committed suicide. He hung himself in this old building, and I wanted to know more about him. And they have all the things that happened after he died, but they didn't have anything about if he had a family or anything. I couldn't find anything on him, and that kind of bugs me.
Yeah.
Because you like to know the history of why somebody's around.
Yeah.
Why, and I can see, you know, if an old woman was killed by her husband, I could see why she'd be around.
Well, right. I mean, there's got to be like some, there's got to be some sort of, you know, police report or, I mean, something. There's got to be something there.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate that, you know, we come across so many of these great, you know, stories and a lot of them are just missing pieces.
Right.
You know, they're like puzzle pieces and then you have to go digging.
And I'm not very computer savvy, so I probably miss a lot of places to look for things, but, interesting.
Huh. So what do you got going on?
What do I got going on? Oh,
did
my
you,
gosh.
Did you finish your kitchen?
Well, my kitchen is mostly finished. I have to do the floor now.
Oh, okay.
Because, well, I have, my house was built in 1972. Everything was that mustard yellow.
Oh,
everything.
Yeah.
And even the floors.
Oh.
So I couldn't afford, we just could not afford to get new floors yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think, you know, what can I do to cover the floors?
Oh, you could paint them.
I did.
You did paint them?
I did. I painted them a gray and I used this countertop paint.
Yeah.
And it smelled horrible.
Yeah.
And then I found some other enamel paint that's supposed to be really good on porches and floors.
Nice.
So I'm going to go over that because, you know, it's worn and...
Yeah, yeah.
I had a hole where two ovens used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was there for years because the oven started on fire, so I had to get rid of the two ovens that were there. And I never put ovens back, so I had this big hole sitting there. So I finally put a pretty little cabinet. It was like a wall cabinet for a bathroom.
Yeah.
And it had glass doors.
Yeah.
It was really pretty. So I thought, you know what? That might just fit in there perfectly. So it fit in there. It was a little short.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the backsplash behind there.
Mm-hmm.
And I put... There's a little gap between the wall and the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
So I put like a little floating shelf on top of there so you can't see behind the cabinet. And then I put little... moldings, pretty little moldings around it, and painted those, and so it looks really nice.
Well, you'll have to let me know how those.
Well, you'll have to come over this summer. We'll have a cookout.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know how those floors turn out and like how they hold up because our kitchen floor, we have 50s janky house.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we lovingly call it, and it's just, we have the smallest kitchen imaginable, and then this horrible linoleum flooring running through it that has, like, pink and gray accents, and it's just, it's peeling up in places. Mm-hmm. And I really want to, like, sand it, like, rough it up, and then do some sort of painting, maybe, like, some sort of, like, a herringbone pattern
or something. Oh, nice!
That will make it look whiter.
Yes.
Than it actually is.
Yes.
This is my thought.
That sounds really good.
Now... I know that if I do it, it's going to wind up looking like pure shite.
Oh.
So, I'm trying to, like, get somebody else to come in and, like, do it and take care of it. Because I know for a fact it's going to look awful if I do it. And I get so frustrated with stuff that if I do it and then it doesn't quite work out, I'm going to just be frustrated with it the entire time that we're living here. If we die in this house, I will be frustrated until the end of my days.
With paint, you can always go over again. True. That's why I don't like wallpaper.
Yeah.
Because you can't just take it down or cover it up. You have to really go through a lot.
I was raised by my grandparents, so wallpaper and like chair rails and antique furniture and stuff, that's all, that's like my jam.
Yeah.
I like that stuff. Yeah. So, that and prunes. Anything with prunes.
Prunes?
I love prunes.
Okay.
Especially those patchkies.
I don't like prunes.
When they have the prune filling.
Mm. No, I don't like prunes.
Oh, I love prunes.
I used to like prune juice when I was little. I had to drink it a lot,
but I liked it. I can't do prune juice, but I can do, like, fillings.
See, I don't like the fruit prune.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's making me crave a patchkie.
It's like
now.
Bananas. I love the smell and the flavor of bananas, but I can't stand eating the banana. The mushiness.
Well, that's kind of, bananas are kind of gross. You know, I read something recently that a large majority of people will willingly put, like, somebody else's sex organ in their mouth, but they will not put the brown piece of a banana in their mouth.
Okay.
Full of useless information. I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know where to go from there, but...
It's right up there with, you know, the glue from envelopes has never been approved for human consumption. So I have all this information just filed away. Useless shit that... But yeah, you've never seen that? It's making rounds on Facebook. Yeah, it's pretty funny. All right, well, guys, on that note, thanks for listening to us.
We'll leave you for today. Take care. See you next time.
Keep thinking about those bananas and stay away from lovers' lanes. And we'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. For more Hauntheads, check out our blog at WordPress. You can find it at hauntheads.wordpress.com. We'd also like to thank you for your iTunes reviews because your reviews will help us improve and we value them greatly. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Podknife, and Blueberry. And don't forget to send us your paranormal stories or favorite folklore tales. You send them our way, we'll read them on the show,
It's awesome. So you can send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Keep listening and stay spooky.